Okay. Okay. Shavuot Tov. Shavuot Tov. I'd like to ultimately develop a perspective on the contribution. Plenty. You have?
I got it. Thank you.
There are a few more over here if anyone needs.
No, I have
more. Okay. So, what I'd like to ultimately do is develop a perspective on Avraham Avinu and his contribution. But before we get to Avraham Avinu, let's start with some contrast to Avraham Avinu, and then we'll ultimately, Bezra Hashem, arrive at Avraham Avinu. There's a famous Gemara. And we're going to focus on the Pesukim, but I want to just start with this famous Gemara and just explain where it's coming from, because I think it puts together a lot of the Pshat. The Gemara says, Gemara in Sanhedrin, this is the third source from the bottom of side one. Okay, third source, the bottom box being the bottom box. Gemara in Sanhedrin, Perichelek, Daf Kuftet. The Gemara, famous Gemara, describes the famous bed of stone. Havilu paraita, there was this bed. Dehavi megani ala orchem, right? That in stone there was this bed where they would put the guests, the orchem. Kimarech gaizle, if the person was too tall for the bed, so they would cut off part of him. And kigutz, if he was too short, so then matchinle, then they would stretch him out. Okay, so they had a one-size-fit-all bed. The bed was whatever size it was, and if the guest was taller than the bed, so they would chop off a part of him to make him fit. And if he was too short, they would stretch him out like on a rack until he was tall enough to fit the bed. Okay? And that was their accommodations for, that was the famous bed of stone. Where did Chazal get this from? Okay, so the idea that stone was not particularly hospitable comes somewhat from the story in Bereshit, in this parsha. It also, even in sharper focus, comes from Yechezkel, Perek Tet Zayin, where it talks about the avon of stone. But the particular bed of stone idea, this idea of this bed where they would either stretch out the guest or cut him down to size, I think derives from another source. If we take a look at Bereishit Perek Yud Aleph and Bereishit Perek Yud Chet, and it actually continues from Perek Yud Gimel, if you look at the top two boxes, you'll see something very interesting, that there is a similarity in language and in imagery between the description of Migdal Bavel and the description of stone. Okay, the most striking comparison, perhaps, is that in the story of stone, in Bereishit Perek Yud Chet, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, we read, Erdana ver'eh ha'kitzakata habai la'asu kala v'imlo eda. Hashem says, Erdana ver'eh, literal translation, obviously it's not meant to be taken literally, but literal translation is, Hashem says, let me go down, I'll go down and see what's going on there. And this, of course, echoes what it says in Migdal Bavel, the story of Migdal Bavel, in Bereishit Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Hey, where it says, "Vayered Adonai lirot et ha'ir v'et migdal asher banu v'nei ha'adam." Okay, in Avot Rabbi Natan, which is right below, in Avot Rabbi Natan, it points out that there are 10 places altogether, 10 places in Tanakh, where we find that that Hashem, so to speak, descends. Okay, Eser Yiridot Yardash Shechina al ha'olam. Okay. 10 times where Hashem, where the Shekhinah goes down to this world, it lists the 10 times, but if you look at the 10 times closely, you'll see that there are two subcategories. 8 of the 10 times Hashem goes down to be seen. It's only twice that Hashem goes down to see. Okay, we got that? Right? The Erdana Ver'eh, or Vayered Hashem Lir'ot, is unique to only two cases. The only two places where it talks about this idea of Hashem being Yored, not for the purpose of being seen, but of seeing what's going on, and that is Migdal Bavel and the Judgment of Stone. Those are totally unique. And so there's a very, very powerful parallelism between the story of Migdal Bavel and the story of Stone, or vice versa. And that is further amplified by the fact that when we're first introduced to Lot and Stone, way before Perek Yud Chet, back in Perek Yud Chet and Perek Yud Tet, back in Perek Yud Gimel, okay, this is on the right hand side, Perek Yud Gimel and Breshit, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayivchar lo Lot et kol kikar yardain, Vayisa Lot mikedem, Vayipardu ish me'al achiv. I talked about Vayisa Lot mikedem, and the famous Chazal that he was leaving not just geographically, but leaving spiritually, saying, I wanted to leave Avram and his values and his beliefs. I want to leave Kadmono Shel Olam. I want to leave Hashem. And the same thing we have both in terms of the Psukim and in terms of the interpretation of Chazal, where in the story of Migdal Bavel, at the very beginning in Pasuk Bet, Vayi Binas'am Mikedem, Vayimtzu Bik'ah, Okay, there's a tremendous parallelism between these two stories. And of course, if you recall, we talked about two weeks ago, the meaning of the story of Migdal Bavel and how Migdal Bavel was the institutionalization of conformity. It was the idea that they were Dvarim Achadim, they were Lashon Echad, they were all unified, they all had the same perspective, the same beliefs, the same ideas, and their goal was to remain that way, that no one should be different, no one should be an individual, everyone should be the same, right? That's the idea of Migdal Bavel we talked about at length a couple of weeks ago. It seems to me that what Chazal are doing in this Gemara in Sanhedrin that we began with, of the bed of stone, where if someone was too long, they cut off part of him. And if he was too short, they would stretch him out. Primarily, Chazal are not, you know, certainly they're you know, keying into the idea of the opposition to Hachnasat Archim in stone. But there's a deeper message here. And the deeper message is that stone was like Migdal Bavel, right? Stone was like Migdal Bavel. What was Migdal Bavel about? That everyone had to conform. Everyone had to be the same. Everyone had to have the same approach, the same ideas, the same lifestyle. And what the Gemara in Sanhedrin is saying is that stone, which didn't value people, stone was of the same type as Migdal Bavel. What was Stone about? Stone was about that there was one size that fit everybody. And there was this one bed that everyone had to fit into. If someone, you know, came to this society, this society was similarly conformist like Migdal Bavel. And therefore, if someone was, you know, didn't fit because they were too tall, so you cut down the person to fit the mold. If the person is too short, so you stretch them out to fit the mold. The point is that everyone had to fit into that same mold, right? So really the description of the bed of stone that we have here in the Gemara in Sanhedrin very much echoes the idea of Migdal Bavel. And I think that's not coincidental, because if you look at the description of Migdal Bavel and of stone, they are really, they're very much interconnected in Bereishit Perek Yud Aleph and Yud Gimel and Yud Chet in terms of stone. We find this comparison in several other Pesukim as well. Just to give you two examples, Bereishit Perek Yud Tet, Pasuk Chaf Chet, this is about the middle of the first side. So it talks about Vayashkev al Pnei Stom v'Amora. So here it's talking about the judgment, the destruction of Stom and Amora. Val Pnei Kol Pnei Eretz HaKikar, Vayar v'nei ala kitor ha'aretz ki kitor ha'kivshan. And remember, we talk about the Netziv's idea that the Migdal Bavel, the furnace of Migdal Bavel, the Kivshan Ha'esh of Avraham Avinu, that Avraham Avinu was thrown into. Avraham Avinu was thrown into the Kivshan Ha'esh. It says in the Netziv that was the Kivshan Ha'esh with which they were building Migdal Bavel. It's just very fascinating that it talks here about, describes Sodom and Amorah's destruction like the Kitor HaKivshan. Similarly, in Yeshayahu Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Yud Tet, where it's talking about Bavel, I was talking about Bavel, and we spoke again 2 weeks ago about the relationship between Bavel of the time of Yeshayahu and Yirmiyahu and Yechezkel. It's not all the same time, but general period of time, the end of Bayit Rishon, and the Bavel of the empire that destroys the Beit HaMikdash and exiles Bnei Israel, and Migdal Bavel, right? Vahita Bavel, Tzvi Mamlachot Tiferet Gaon Kastim, Kimapechat Elohim et Sodom ve et Amorah. Right, Yeshayahu talks about how the fate of Bavel is going to be, the destruction of Bavel is going to be like the destruction of Sodom and Amorah. Okay, so again, we have very much this comparison between Migdal Bavel on the one hand, Bavel and Migdal Bavel on the one hand, and the destruction of Sodom, the site of Sodom, etc. on the other hand. Let's turn the page. So, before we begin the next page, just take a quick stock of where we are, okay, where we are, and that is the following. We have this comparison between Sodom and Amorah on the one hand, and Migdal Bavel on the other hand, and this is in the form of a comparison, right? And the comparison is in terms of the idea of conformity, the idea that there's this unified society, right? There's a negation of the individual. What's important is the society, the state, and how everyone has to be the same. Everyone's a, you know, is put into the same mold and fit into the belief system, into the values, etc., of that one society. Okay, everyone have it. So this is the comparison that we have between Migdal Bavel and Sodom and Amorah. Okay, now if we go a step further, what is here? We're talking about a comparison. Let's talk about contrast now. Okay, let's go. Broaden this. What is the, we learned a couple weeks ago, what is the contrast to Migdal Bavel, to this Tower of Conformity? What's the contrast to it? Who represents the contrast to Migdal Bavel? What? Absolutely. Okay, we have Avraham Avinu here, who, right, it's all about Shehu Me'ever Echad, the Kol'om Kol Me'ever Sheni. Avraham represents bringing a different approach to the world, right? A different set of beliefs and values and behavior to the world. Avraham Avinu is the opposite. That's the whole idea that the Netziv talks about again, about Avraham Avinu being thrown into the Kivshan Ha'esh of Migdal Bavel. Avraham Avinu emerging at the time when Migdal Bavel is being built, right? The idea that Avraham Avinu discovers Hashem when he's 48 years old, one of the two opinions in Bereishit Rabbah, he discovers Hashem when Migdal Bavel is being built, when he's 48 years old. Why are these two things put together? Because there's a clash between the two, right? We saw in the Pesukim as well, Perek Tet, Yud, Yud Alf, right? I'm assuming everyone remembers it, so, okay. Anyhow, but there's this contrast between Migdal Bavel and anyone who doesn't remember, so you can explain it to them. Yeah, so here we go. Ready? So that's Avraham Avinu, the contrast. Who is always in contrast, in opposition to Sodom and Amorah? Who is presented as the opposite of the type of society, right? The culture of Sodom and Amorah? Okay, once again, Avraham Avinu, right? And much of Sefer Dvarim is built on the model of the household of Avram versus the society of Sodom and Amorah, right? And we find that again and again, especially towards the end of Sefer Dvarim, many, many times. The idea of the, what the household of Avram represents and the values of tzedakah and mishpat and chesed in contrast to the cruelty and the lack of compassion in Sodom and Gomorrah. So, well, let me try to rectify that just a little bit. Okay. We have a second contrast. Okay, a second contrast. And yeah. Okay, this is how I think about it. I don't know, it doesn't have to be, but in terms of like it being like a triangle, but the idea is that Sodom and Gomorrah are compared to each other, and each one in turn is, you know, equivalent to the other, and at the same time in opposition to Avraham Avinu, right? Which makes sense that they're thereby equivalent, okay? So if we now turn our attention on Avraham Avinu, it's a very interesting thread that runs through the life of Avraham Avinu. And that's the following. Let's take a look at a few examples, not trying to be comprehensive, but just to take a few examples and to see how this plays out, and then we'll come back to Sodom and to Migdal Bavel. Okay, so this is the top box on the second side. Bereishit Perek Yudalet. Okay? We have this story in Perek Yudalet of this war between the four kings and the five kings, right? And in the course of that war of the four kings and the five kings, and we have this like major world war going on, you know, in the region, and four kings, five kings, and Sodom being captured, and Avram plays a very important role in it. What's Avram's role? So ve'avo ha'palit, ve'agid la'avram ha'evri, v'shochem be'elonei mamre, ha'mori, achi aner, achi eshko, achi aner, ve'hem ba'lei brit Avram. Ve'ishma Avram, ki'nishpa achiv, ve'yark et chanichav, yilidei beito, shmona asar u'shlosh meot, ve'idof adam. And if you stop to think about it for a second, Avram's role in this war is fascinating, because the war as a whole is about, you know, huge territories and property and wealth and acquisitions, and there's this fight between the and subjugation of, you know, one side over the other. It's about these, you know, great territories of the four kings and the five kings. Avram's role in the milchama is about Lot, about one person, about one individual, right? I'm gonna see that, right? In other words, Avram's interest in this war is not about being on the side of the four kings or the five kings or, you know, his empire or their empire. It's about one person. It's about Lot. We go to Bereishit Perek Yud Chet, the famous debate about Sodom, the fate of Sodom and Gomorrah, and we read the following. Before we get to that, Perek Yud Chet, the beginning of the parasha, we have Avram Avinu and Avram, despite his circumstances of just having undergone Brit Milah at a very advanced age, and he's recuperating, he's convalescing, and Avram sees what appears to him as these three individuals, and he runs to go to greet them and bring them in. Okay? Again, Avram here is on the level of these individuals, these, you know, three people off the street. We go a few psukim later to the debate about Sodom and Gomorrah, and listen to what Avram brings to the table. Hashem is judging the Kikar Yarden. Hashem is judging these five cities, some of them very, very major ones. And what does Avram bring to the discussion? Hashem says, Zakat, right, Vayomer Adonai, Zakat Sodom v'Gomorrah ki rabba, v'chatatam ki kavda ma'od. Right, this is a terrible society, says Hashem. Erdana ver'eh katzakata ba'ilayasu kalav im lo eda. Ve'efnu misham, and a few, then we continue. Ve'efnu misham hanashim, ve'elchus sedoma, v'avraham, odeno omeh lefnei Adonai. ויש אברהם ויאמר, האף תספה, אולי יש 50 צדיקים בתוך העיר. האף תספה ולא תישא למקום למען 50 הצדיקים אשר בקרבה, חליל לך מעשות כדבר הזה, להעמיד צדיק עם רשע, והיה כצדיק הרשע, חליל לך, השופט כל הארץ לא יעשה משפט. What does Avram bring to the discussion between him and Hashem about the fate of stone? Hashem is talking about the judgment of the whole Kikar Yarden, and particularly of stone, Zakat Sodom Amora Kiraba, etc. And Avram comes and says, he doesn't dispute the fact that Sodom is a terrible place, that's a terrible society, that's an evil society. What does Avram come and say? Avram says, perhaps there are some individuals who are tzaddikim. And tzaddikim here probably doesn't mean that, as Rabban explains in several contexts, tzaddikim doesn't necessarily mean, we mentioned last time, necessarily mean that they were righteous people, they were wonderful people. It means like people who were innocent, who weren't deserved. In other words, Avram shifts the discussion, shifts the focus from the society to the individual, right? And that seems to me a thread that runs throughout the stories about Avram. I'm not saying every single one, that there's nothing else. I'm not saying this is the only dimension. But one of the major things that is special about Avram, that is this particular contribution of Avram, it seems to me, is this focus on the individual. By contrast, when we look at Sodom and Amora, we look at Migdal Bavel, aside from the fact that they, you know, this idea of conformity and lack of individualism, there's also the idea that if you look at it, it's entirely anonymous. There are no individuals. It's all about the society. It's all about the state, about the, you know, in the War of the Kings is about, you know, the society. There's the king who represents the entire empire, but there are no individuals. You look at the story of Migdal Bavel, Vayhi chol ha'aretz safach dvarim achadim, Vayhi b'nas'am mikedem. Who? Chol ha'aretz. It's everyone. Everyone is just, everyone's anonymous. Everyone is just the group. There are no individuals. Vayomer ishal re'ehu. Havanil b'nal v'enim, etc. Right? Again, everyone's anonymous. We don't know a single individual from the psukim. I'm not talking about midrashim. Right? There's the ear, there's the population, there's the society. There are no individuals. The same thing is true in stone, right? Termi shkavu v'anshei ha'ir anshei stone nasabu abayit minar v'atzakein kol ami katzel. Right? There are anshei ha'ir. There's the am. This is an anonymous population. It's the society, it's not the individual. Nirali, that part of the contrast between Avraham Avinu and Bavel and Sodom and everything associated with them is on one level it's about Avraham represents the iconoclast, the individual, the person who is blazing a new trail, as opposed to Migdal Bavel and Sodom Gomorrah, which are about everybody being the same. But it reflects something almost deeper, which is that Avram is focused on the importance and the value of the individual. Not to say that there isn't an aspect also of Am, etc. That's also very important. But what Avram Avinu really, the contrasting view, the chiddush of Avram Avinu is that whereas the world in general viewed it that what was important was the community, what was important was the society, what was important was the state, right? And people were there to serve the king or the emperor or the whatever it was. And everyone was subservient to that individual because it was all about the state, it was all about the country or whatever it was. Not about the individual. And Avram comes along and says that I'm going to go to war over this one person who I have to go and save. I'm going to invite in these guests who are just three individuals. I'm going to come to Sodom and not look at just the fact that it's an evil society, it's that as a society, as a state, as a city, whatever, it's corrupt. That's true. But what about the individuals? This person is innocent. This person is innocent. This person is a good person. The significance of the individual, both in terms of Avram, in terms of himself, and in terms of everybody he comes in contact with, I think is a defining feature of Avram Avinu's approach to things, and something that is very, very fundamental to the entire narrative of Avram Avinu from beginning to end. I want to just note that it's very fascinating the way the Nevi'im talk about Avram Avinu, and there's a lot to say about this, but just b'kitzur, Yecheskel Perek Lam Gimel, where we read, Ben Adam, Yoshvei HaCharavot Ha'ele Al-Admat Yisrael, Omrim Le'mor, Echad Haya Avraham, V'yirashat Ha'aretz, V'anachnu Rabim Lanu Nitna Ha'aretz L'marasha. Again, there's a whole context to it, and what the argument is, etc., but this phrase itself is just very fascinating. Echad Haya Avraham. Avraham, it was one. It's actually said a couple of times in the Nevi'im. Avram was one. Avram was an individual. And Avram's focus, to a very large extent, was on the individual. It was not on, you know, merely, certainly not only on the state or the community or the society, but on the individual as an individual. Perhaps this is a further meaning. I'm not saying it's the whole meaning by any means, but perhaps this is a dimension of what we have in Bereishit Perek Yud Bet, when Hashem says to Avram the following, and this is the next to last source on the page, it's the last source that we're doing, but it's the next to last source on the page. Vayomer Adonai el Avram, Lech lecha me'artzecha, me'moladcha, me'beit avicha, el ha'art asher ha'echa. Ve'escha legoy gadol v'avarecha, v'agadla shemecha, v'yei bracha. V'avarecha me'varechecha me'kalecha or, v'nivrechu v'cha kol mishpachot ha'adama. On the one hand, there is an emphasis on the idea that Avram is going to be the father of this great nation. This idea that not only is he going to be a father of the great nation, but that nation is going to be a source of bracha to the entire world. Very much, you know, a view of the importance of the Am and of the whole world. But at the same time, it doesn't start with that. What it starts with is, Lech lecha me'artzecha me'ladcha me'beit avicha. Avram is told that in order to build this great nation that's going to be a source of bracha to the world, how is that going to happen? Where is that bracha going to come from? It's going to come from the fact that Avram has to take himself out from the framework, out of the framework of Artzecha, Moladcha, Mibeit Avicha. Right? All these group contexts of country and homeland and even family, that it's not first and foremost about the group, it starts with the individual. Right? And Avram has to leave behind those frameworks that are these more global frameworks and move forward and become the, you know, Echad Haya Avram in order to achieve these goals of V'escha l'goy gadol v'arecha v'agala shemecha v'ei bracha. So I think that the Lech lecha me'artzcha m'lecha m'beit avicha is very much in line with what we see throughout the entire narrative of Avram, throughout the entire life of Avram. Okay, we're going to stop here. I just have a request and a... just 1 second, I just want to stop the recording. Sorry, bear with me for a second.